going, hour number three, and we have a backdrop of death, terrible destruction in Iran. Remember, the B-52s are now no longer impeded. They can fly over Iran with impunity. And what do B-52s do? They carpet bomb. And if you haven't seen a video of carpet bombing by a B-52, you need to go look. Just look. Type that in, B-52 carpet bombing, and look up video. Look at the video. Look at what the unbelievable destruction is. It's mind-boggling, to be honest. It's even more, I think, frightening. We're all used to seeing nuclear explosions now. But go look at, they used to call them an arc light operation, A-R-C-H-L-I-G-H-T, carpet bombing, stunning in its ferocity, utter devastation. Carpet bomb, that's what they're doing to Iran now. Now, on the other side of the coin, the Iranians, and remember, nobody gave them all of their missiles. They built them. They designed them. They engineered them. They're doing things that we don't even have missiles that can do, right? We don't have 6,000-mile-an-hour banks of ballistic missiles that can come in hypersonically like that. We don't have that. We don't have missiles that will release 200 submunitions like they do. They call them cluster warheads, whatever. But we don't have that, at least not anything we've seen or heard about, not I. And other things as well. These are a very, very advanced people, very smart. Scientists are world class all the way, and they've done this all on their own. They've been planning for this for 20 years. They knew sooner or later the Jews would come after them, and that's what's going on right now. There's no other way to phrase it, honestly. That's it. Anyhow, let's find out what Father Paul Kramer has to say about this on the day before. I guess it's Saturday there, and Easter is Sunday. Let's see what he thinks about Pope Prevost and what he may or may not say on Sunday. If there was ever an opportunity for a pope, a corrupt pope, to turn around the church or certainly change its direction, it would be this Sunday, and Pope Prevost has that opportunity. Will he? Highly doubtful. It'll be another plain vanilla, typical speech that you'd expect the pope to give. Shame on you. Killing is bad. War is evil. Blah, blah, blah. No, no, no. I don't see it happening. I wish I was wrong, but I'm not. Father Kramer, welcome back. Thanks for being here. Your views, sir, let's hear them. I'm sure they're probably similar to mine.
It would require a miracle of grace, a miraculous conversion for Prevost to reverse his position and actually fulfill the apostolic successor of Peter the Apostle. There's no sign at all that he's going to do such a thing. He's going to do just what you said a moment ago. That's what he's going to do on Easter Sunday. No doubt about it. Prevost, the way he has given such a fulsome praise, as it were, to this person who has been named the so-called Archbishop of Canterbury.
Who is this? I'm not up to speed on that. Is there something new I've missed?
I don't even remember her name.
Oh, it's a woman. Oh my. Okay.
But he speaks in such terms as if this person, all the dignity of the office he's heaping on her, as if she is a legitimate successor of the apostles. And that's impossible. It's absolutely impossible.
Yeah, I get it. Nothing against women. When I said that, I'm speaking exactly along the line that Father Kramer is making clear now. It's ridiculous. She's not an apostle. Yeah. Go ahead.
So, wow. That's one thing. And then If you look at the Anglican Church, I've been saying this for decades, they have...
Kramer is making clear now. It's ridiculous. It's she's not an apostle. Yeah. Go ahead.
So, wow. That's one thing. And then, if you look at the Anglican Church, I've been saying this for decades, they have, that's their moral code. That's the Church of England moral code, basically. There is no moral code left in the Anglican Communion, at least especially in the Church of England. They do have regional synods, so they're not all as bad as the Church of England itself. Some of the Africans, I think, are a bit more reasonable. But by and large, they have no moral code left, and that church is the prototype of what the synodalists want to do to the Catholic Church.
Uh-huh.
So it's no mystery why Prevost is heaping such dignity upon this so-called Archbishop of Canterbury, who is not a bishop, according to
Who named this person in that role, in that position? Who appointed her to that position? How did that happen?
I don't know the process. I know the process in Rome, but I don't know the process in England. So I really couldn't answer that question. But it's a synodal thing. They choose who's going to be their archbishop and
got it.
Or their so-called archbishop, mm-hmm. their archlaywoman, the archlaywoman of Canterbury, and
there's something amusing in that statement, my friend. I don't want to go there, but the archlaywoman. Okay, getting into the vernacular portion of things. Go ahead, please.
Well, they she'll be elected and.
Yeah.
Everything else is a rubber stamp process, and that's how it's done. So, on the other hand, on the other side of things, you have the Society of St. Pius X, founded by Archbishop Marcel Lefebvre, who refused to accept the reforms of Vatican II, especially the doctrinal changes that were somewhat cleverly camouflaged, but they could not be entirely hidden from the Vatican II documents.
Got it.
The heretical content of those documents had been brought out in various writings. In my own book, also, is called The Suicide of Altering the Faith in the Liturgy. And in that book, I explained that it is the dogma of the Catholic faith that the church cannot get rid of the traditional Roman rite and replace it with an entirely reformed rite, which is what Pope Paul VI did. That is against the dogma of the faith. It was solemnly professed, declared by the Ecumenical Council of Constance in session number 39, I believe. Session number 39, that not even the Pope has the power to change that right, that the Pope has to make an oath to keep, to hold to that right, to preserve that right. He cannot change it. He can't create a new right. And that was, again, formulated by the Council of Trent, that if anyone says that the customary rite handed down in the Roman Church can be, I can't remember the exact wording, but if the customary rite used in the solid administration of the sacraments can be changed into other new rites, let it be condemned. That means it was solemnly pronounced in a dogmatic canon, that it is a heresy. The church considers it a heresy for even someone to say that you can take the traditional Latin rite of Mass and change it into a new rite, which is exactly what Pope Paul VI did.
Got it.
And I remember when Pope Paul VI announced that there would be this change. It was in the spring of 1969, he announced that there's going to be a change in the liturgy of the Latin Church. And that would be in the following autumn. September, October, I can't remember what year, I can't remember what month of the year, but it was later in the year they would implement the new rite of Mass with the new missal. And he said, in the document, it's called Missale Romanum, he actually goes so far as to say, we used to believe that the liturgy was the untouchable expression of our faith. I was thinking, my goodness, we used to believe? I mean, we don't believe this anymore? We used to believe? No, that is not something that we can say we believed before, that but we no longer believe, because it is a matter of faith. And the faith is for all time. From the time we receive the tradition from the apostles until the coming of Christ at the end of the world, we must hold fast to that faith, to that traditional doctrine, that doctrine that has been handed down to us from the apostles. We can't change that. And that's why it is against the law of God, as solemnly defined by the church, that the liturgy is untouchable. It is the untouchable expression of our faith. We can't say like Pope Paul VI, we used to believe it was the untouchable expression of our faith, because that is to defect from the Catholic faith. And this is, so now we have the situation, the bishops of the Society of St. Pius X are getting old, two of them have died, so they announced that on the 1st of July, they're going to consecrate new bishops. And the response from Tucho Fernandez, of course, is very threatening.
Yep. He hasn't gone away, has he? No. He's lurking.
No, not at all.
He's planning. No, he's loves intrigue, this guy.
Well, we can recall that in 1988, Archbishop Lefebvre consecrated those four bishops so that the church's traditions could be preserved, because the Vatican is not preserving the traditions. So Archbishop Marcel Lefebvre consecrated four bishops. And the Vatican responded with the declaration that they had incurred automatic excommunication. Now, that statement was fraudulent. And it was pointed out by one of the most eminent professors of canon law and he cited the canons, and I cited the same canons in my book, and I much more briefly and concisely explained than did Count Neri Capponi, who was a very renowned professor of canon law. And what I explained was that according to the very letter of the law, if the archbishop believed, even if he's in error, but he believed that what he's doing is necessary, it's a moral necessity that he do this, even in disobedience, he cannot incur any automatic penalty. So, hypothetically, if someone is going to violate an order, he's been given a specific command, you may not do this. But he says, in conscience, it is necessary, I must do this. Then that law that says If he does it, he's automatically excommunicated. That law is not applicable to him because the law exempts him from automatic excommunication.
Got it.
So if a man is going to be disobedient to the Pope's command and the Pope wants him to be excommunicated for disobedience, if the man believes that he's doing something out of necessity and his conscience compels him to do it, then if the Pope wants to excommunicate such a man, he must inflict the penalty. He must declare that he declares the man to be excommunicated, not to incur. It's not an automatic excommunication, that by committing this act, he has excommunicated himself according to law. No, that is not applicable to a person who believes he's doing what is necessary and justified in conscience. So the Pope would have to inflict the penalty. And the difference is, that's what they call sentencia ferenda. That means the sentence must be pronounced by the judge. He must inflict the penalty. He must pronounce the judgment and the sentence of excommunication upon the offender for that person to be validly excommunicated. He cannot be automatically excommunicated like they said happened to Archbishop Lefebvre. What Archbishop Lefebvre did was he consecrated the bishops in the Vatican. The Pope and the Cardinal Gantin came out and said, well, he's excommunicated himself because according to the law, a person who does this is automatically excommunicated. But the law itself says this is the exception. If the person acts believing he's acting out of necessity, he cannot incur an automatic penalty. He cannot be automatically excommunicated. Now, it's clear as the light of day. It's in black and white. And that's why I say that what Pope John Paul II did by making that declaration and what Cardinal Gantin did by making that declaration is they committed an act of fraud upon the whole church. Because it is beyond all shadow of doubt. Beyond all shadow of doubt. Now they're going to try to do the same thing again with the bishops who this coming 1st of July are going to be consecrated bishop. The Superior General of the Society of St. Pius X is Father Daniele Pagliarani. He announced that they will be having their bishops consecrated. And I don't really care one way or the other if they say that they have incurred an automatic excommunication. We know that will be a fraud. They don't want to take upon themselves the responsibility of inflicting through the judicial process, inflicting the penalty of excommunication upon them. It seems they don't want to do that because and the real reason they won't want to do this is because the way Rome has defected from the Catholic faith, the way they have altered the constitution of the church from the apostolic divine constitution of the church to a synodal constitution, to the extent that they have defected from the divine constitution of the church in their doctrine and in the way that they profess the church to exist in its nature, that they are defecting from the church. They are the ones who are leaving the church.
Right.
And the big lie is that they will be excommunicated and they will be outside the church. If they consecrate these men as bishops, that is a schismatic act. They will say, they will claim it's a schismatic act. It isn't. It was proven by eminent canonists, the professors and doctors of canon law. And I explained it also in my book in more brief terms. But I explained exactly why it is not a schismatic act. Because in the Code of Canon Law, the crime of schism is a crime that separates a person from the body of the church. So if a person refuses to be in communion with the church, with the Catholic Church, that is, if a person refuses to be in communion with the Catholic Church,
right.
if the person refuses to be subject to the authority of the Pope, that person is schismatic. But what Archbishop Lefebvre did, he said he accepted the authority of the Pope. He says he never rebelled against accepting the jurisdiction of the Pope in all legitimate commands and all legitimate laws of the Church. He never rebelled against that. He never rejected the Pope as being his superior. What he did was, he said, I must disobey this command because it is against my conscience that I have the duty to preserve the tradition in the Church. And in order to preserve the traditional rites and the sacraments and of the Holy Mass, I must consecrate these bishops. So that is, in canon law, that's called disobedience to the precept.
Got it.
So it is only disobedience to the precept. It is not rejecting the authority. It is not rebelling against the authority of the Pope himself, but it's only objecting to a certain command. So that is not an act of schism, because to be guilty of schism, that is a crime against the unity of the Church.
Father Kramer, would you do me a favor, and for our listeners, schism, are you saying schism or schism? And if schism is the word, we need a definition of that. I assume it's similar to schism, S-C-H. How do we spell schism?
It's just a question of pronunciation.
Ah, very good. Thank you. Very good. Got it.
Some people like to pronounce it schism, but the actual pronunciation in the English language is schism.
Thank you.
And schism, again, is the refusal to be subject to the authority of the Pope, or to refuse to be adamantly in refusal to be subject to the authority of the Pope, or to be refused to be in communion with the members of the Church. So if a person very adamantly knows that the man is the Pope, and he says, I am not going to obey this man, I hate this man, I don't accept him as authority over me, that's schismatic.
Got it.
But if the person says, the command he's giving me is wrong, it violates my conscience, and I feel it's my duty before God to disobey this command, that is not an offense against the unity of the Church. That is disobedience to a particular precept. And that makes all the difference in the world, because consecrating a bishop without the Pope's permission is not classified under the crimes against the universe, the crimes against the unity of the Church. Schism is a crime against the universe, the crime against the unity of the Church, whereas disobedience by consecrating a bishop without permission is an act of usurpation. It's only a usurpation, but it is not a crime against the unity of the Church.
Uh-huh.
So this is the very crux of the matter that shows that what Pope John Paul II did in 1988 by declaring them to be schismatic, that just like to say that they were automatically excommunicated, that was a fraud, and for them to say that they are schismatic because they committed this schismatic act of consecrating bishops, by saying that, they committed another act of fraud. So on two points, the Vatican was guilty of fraud by saying that they incurred automatic excommunication, number one. Number two, by saying that they went into schism. That was also fraudulent, a fraudulent declaration of Pope John Paul II, a fraudulent declaration by Cardinal Gantin, and by the Secretary of State, those were fraudulent declarations.
Uh-huh.
They were in 1988, and they will be fraudulent again in this year of 2026. They're going to pull the same stunt. They're going to declare that these men are excommunicated, that they're outside of the church, whereas in reality, they, in the Society of St. Pius X, Archbishop Lefebvre founded that organization in order to preserve the Catholic faith, to preserve the Catholic sacraments, to preserve the Catholic Mass.
Okay.
And insofar as someone will abandon the sacred rites and adopt new rites, insofar as they will abandon the doctrinal tradition of the Church and embrace new doctrines, those are the people who are leaving the Church. Those are the people who are excommunicating themselves, not the ones who hold fast to the Catholic tradition. They're the ones who remain in the Church. So the Vatican wants to depart from the faith. They want to defect from the Catholic faith. In so doing, they are defecting from the Catholic Church. They are, in fact, it is those in the Vatican who are leaving the Church by abandoning the Catholic faith and embracing false doctrines and false practices. It is those who hold fast to the tradition. Those are the ones who remain Catholic, who remain in the Church. So, in effect, what the Society of St. Pius X is saying, you want to defect from the faith, you want to adopt the UN agenda, go ahead. You can do whatever you like. You can leave the Church, but we're not going to leave with you. We're going to stay in the Church. You can go. Right. You can go out. Chucho Fernandez, Robert Prevost, you can go out of the Church. You can leave the Church.
Uh-huh.
But we are staying in. That's I believe. I think I've pretty much accurately summarized what is the position of the Society of St. Pius X on this question.
Yeah. Yeah. Very good. All right. Let me do this. Let me think in my mind how to phrase this. All right. Here. If you were Pope Prevost and you really were running counter to the doctrines, the dogma that has been thrown into the face of Catholicism the last 20 years or more, what would you say in your address, just a few highlights on Easter Sunday, to shake everything up and let the faithful know that they have not been abandoned or betrayed and that the Church is alive and still well? What would you say? What should Prevost really say to shake things up and make his mark? If he were a real man, not being controlled or dominated by some shady, dark power structure in behind the walls of the Vatican, what would you say? What kinds of things would you say?
Well,
take your time. Take your time.
He would, if I were in his position, the first thing I would do is make a public act of repentance. And I would declare that since the Second Vatican Council, the Church has been led astray by its pastors.
Got it.
And principally, the ones principally at fault are the Pope.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is the Popes. It was Pope Paul VI who browbeated the bishops into signing the documents at the Second Vatican Council.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The bishops were disquieted. They were disturbed by some of the things they were reading. And they said they needed more time to study the documents. And they were rushed. They were hurried. And they were told, you don't have time to study the documents anymore. You've had enough time already. The Pope is waiting for you to sign, and you must sign. So they were coerced. They were being pressured into signing these documents.
Gotcha.
And
all right.
The rest is history. We have seen the Catholic Church being dismantled, and another church.
Oh, piece
is
by piece,
place.
And large pieces at that. Yes, yes.
And that is the third secret of Fatima. That is the substance of the third secret of Fatima.
So if you were Pope Prevost, you would cite the third secret of Fatima in renouncing the, God, I attempted to say communist, but the direction the church has been forced into, this pagan, nativistic lie, this fraud, you would renounce it all. That would be a spectacular statement in a world of 8 billion people that would go down in history. He really does have a chance to make a mark in history, the likes of which few could even imagine having. But he won't do it. But he has that chance. That's how important this could be, but it won't be. And I'm sorry to say it, but that's how it looks to me.
I don't see it happening this year, this Easter. I just don't see it happening. I think the situation is going to have to be so dire.
Yeah.
That the bishops who are living in a perpetual state of brain fog, the light is going to shine through that fog eventually.
Yeah.
I wish it was fog.
I'm not convinced it's brain fog. I think these people are really corrupted right to their core. Some may be in a brain fog state, yeah, okay. But this is a major change in steerage, direction. Yes, go ahead, please. Very good.
Yes, I agree with you that there are a large number of bishops who are exactly what you said they are. But there are also a good number who are in this state of brain fog. I was sent to various countries by the Fatima Center in Canada.
Right.
I was sent to visit bishops. I visited bishops and cardinals in the Vatican. I visited many bishops mm-hmm. in Brazil, bishops mm-hmm. in the Philippine Islands, bishops in various parts of Europe. I visited a significant number of bishops, and I was able to get and I took notes, of course, on every meeting I had with every bishop, and it looked like a good number of bishops. And I could see that there were some hardliners, that there was no use talking to them. But there was a good number of bishops who still really had the Catholic faith, but they were having this brain fog about having to accept the Second Vatican Council.
Right.
It was worded, the documents were worded in such a way in order to deceive people into believing that this is not a break with the Catholic faith, that it is not a betrayal. Bishop Salvador Lasso, I remember he was a bishop in the Philippines, bishop of Agaola Union, if I recall correctly. I was at a discussion with him, because I used to spend some of my afternoons going to his house, and we would have discussions. And talking about the Second Vatican Council documents and implementing the Second Vatican Council, I said the bishops had the duty to, they should have read these documents more astutely. And he said, we didn't read them astutely because the Vatican, the Pope, these are our spiritual fathers. We have the, out of filial piety and obedience to them, we didn't question what they were telling us to do. And he said he was angry. He said, but now that I'm retired, I have read the documents carefully. And he said that they were deceived and that they had, he said, they have abused our filial piety. That's what Bishop Lasso said about the bishops and the Pope in the Vatican. He said, they have abused our filial piety. It's going to take a significant number of bishops to understand that they have been led astray. And they're going to have the humility to accept that they were wrong. And the Pope himself is going to have to realize, if he is a true disciple of Christ, and if he's going to be a true member of the Catholic Church, to uphold, to profess the Catholic faith, uphold the faith in Jesus Christ, he's going to have to admit that what they have done is wrong, that Vatican II has led them astray, that Vatican II is destroying the Church, and there's only one way to save the Church, and that is to nullify the reforms of Vatican II.
Right. Right. Well, okay. Well, and Easter, like few others, we are standing on the edge, once again, of... There's a lot of talk about potential nuclear weapons being used for the first time in 80 years, I guess, or thereabout. I don't think the Jews would hesitate for a moment out of compassion of the people who they're about to slaughter. I think that geopolitically is the only thing that's going to hold them back. Trump will do what he's told. I still think he's, in all likelihood, a converted Jew. If he wasn't a whole lifelong Jew, I don't know, but he does what he's told. So we'll see. We'll see. It's going to be interesting, to put it mildly. A lot of people potentially are going to die. The Iranians have said again today they want nothing to do with talking or dialoguing with the Trump administration at this point in time. Nothing. This is nothing to talk about. Somehow they have planned so well for the 20-plus years they've been waiting for this. They knew the Jews were coming for them at some point, that they are still able to throw significant, if not enormous, missile weight and explosives at Israel, Haifa, Tel Aviv, etc. They have not hit the Dimona reactor for reasons that are rather obvious. Israel would be ruined. But more than that, the entire Middle East would turn against Iran because they would end up spreading radioactive death all over, everywhere. Depends on the winds, depends on the dose, but it wouldn't be a good thing. It's a very unwise thing to do geopolitically, etc. Anyhow, there you go.
Iran is not going to run out of ammunition anytime soon because they are being sent equipment from Russia.
They're being sent stuff from Russia, from China, maybe from North Korea.
I just read this today. I read the reports today that they are receiving war material from Russia. So they're not going to run out anytime soon. And the strategy that they have adopted in this war is entirely the correct one. If they want to win this war, they're doing it. They're doing a good job for. They're going to wear out the other side.
I think they've already worn out the American people. They're sick of it. They know that they've been taken to the cleaners by their own government. They know this is wrong. They know there's all Iran has to do is survive, and they win. Think about it. That's true. If they survive, they have emerged victorious. They have not been maybe bowed, maybe bent, but not broken, so they can claim victory, and should, when this is over. Trump can't get out. He's stuck. He doesn't know what to do. He's got no policy. There's no end game to this. They're just throwing more explosives on the backs of Iranian civilization. That's what they do.
Exactly.
Kill. It's a joke. A sick joke. But it's the
truth. From the American perspective, this war is becoming desperate.
Agreed. Yeah. They can't. I'm sure that they. I'm not saying that they're in shock, but I don't think many of them are really able to assimilate the simple fact that Iran is still throwing enormous weaponry at not only Israel, but the Gulf states. It's just, it's blowing everything up. They shouldn't have lasted this long. Trump, I'm sure, was told an entirely different scenario by his Pentagram flunkies, including Hogsett. It's a joke. It's a bad joke. They overestimated Iran by... they actually underestimated, if you want to look at it that way, but whatever. They didn't figure it out. They really didn't.
Well, that Hogsett is a lunatic.
Of course he is. Yes.
And his boss is a lunatic also. I mean,
yes, sir.
You mentioned how the Iranians, how scientific, these are bright people. These are intelligent people. And I remember, I'm talking about even 30 years ago, the American university students were such flunkies, playing video games or pinball or whatever in the student union. And were all these Asian students and Chinese students, they would go to the student union area where they had some peace and quiet, and they would study.
And I saw it. I saw it at the university. They were deadly serious about learning and education. The Americans, floating off into the distance, into the ethers, and they still haven't come back. They're virtually out of the game now. They're just not even participants. They're terminally addicted to their screens. 7.5 hours a day. When they get under any stress, what do? They escape to their little endorphin-releasing smartphone activities. That's what they do. TikTok, YouTube Shorts. Think about it.
So Instagram. What does Trump say about these people? These non-white people. He says they are genetically inferior.
Right.
And
right.
So, because they are genetically inferior, you have what's his name, Gregory Bovino, who said, "This is unbelievable." He said that we need to deport 100 million people out of the United States. 100 million! That's one third of the population of the United States. He wants to deport.
I know. He doesn't have both feet on the ground anymore. He's just an idiot. Look at videos of him during his first term. Notice the difference in mental cohesion, of expressivity. Watch the difference. You'll see it. He's not aging well, okay?
Yeah.
You can't eat fast food for 40 years and expect to be in good health. I think the guy could have a heart attack any time. Or a stroke, anytime. Either induced or naturally spontaneous, whatever.
But the Trumptards have been so mesmerized by this man that they're living in a world of a totally delusional world.
Agreed.
And they're so hyped up about deporting anyone that they consider to be foreign, and I put that word in quotation marks. I was listening to a video of a woman today, and she says she's so tired of people telling her, go back to China. She was born in Chicago, and she's not Chinese. She's Korean.
Yeah.
She's of Korean ethnicity. She's an American from Chicago, born in Chicago.
Got it.
And she's tired of having these people just shout at her, go back to China. But the thing is, they're trying to denaturalize citizens now. They want to outlaw dual citizenship. They really do want to deport, get rid of 100 million people, and most of those are Americans. what is 20 million or so, 20 million perhaps illegal aliens in the United
States?
There could be
30 million. I don't know. I would suggest leaning more toward 30 million, but 200, yeah, your numbers are correct. This is stupid. 335 million people, all right? 80% of which have been injected with a death vax. 80% of which have had their lives shortened or ended, and they are suffering from dozens and dozens and dozens of different kinds of health issues that may or may not be observable at this point in time. That's why so many of them are going to the ER with a complaint of, let's just say, headache, and they find out they've got stage 4 brain cancer, et cetera, et cetera. This is not a joke. And they've found out now that 90% of those Americans, 20% of Americans, who did not take the shot are now showing mRNA and probably spike in their blood anyhow. They've been shed upon. The transfection has been incredibly successful. They had to come up with a way to pick up those who refused to take the shot, and they did. Shedding. And it's working. So America's in trouble. I mean, if talking about exporting 100 million people, a lot of those are going to be out of here in the next 3-4 years anyhow because they're on a shortened fuse. They've been dosed with this terrible, evil vax and more. And every time you get the lab-created synthetic bioweapon virus, which is not just like getting a cold and getting over it, you have compounding brain damage, compounding heart damage, etc. Could go on and on. So you don't want to get that virus. You don't want that stuff at all. Forget the vaccine. That's bad enough. You don't want the virus. It'll do terrible things to you. The number of people reporting that they know people, relatives, friends, who are not the same anymore. They've changed entirely. Their personalities, their attitude, their demeanor, their disposition. That's from the shots and from the virus.
And then the Trump and his Zionist Nazis.
Yep.
They are entirely oblivious of the total breakdown of rule and law. The rule of law and the resulting breakdown of society as such, They are causing anarchy in the United States, the disappearance of all the constitutional rights, all of the safeguards that preserve order, that preserve law and order in our society. They are destroying that, but they don't care about that because they are so fanatically fixated on their agenda of ethnic cleansing that they have to remove 100 million people from the United States. And what catastrophe that will have on the economy, what catastrophe that will have on society. They don't care because
they have an agenda of
ethnic cleansing, the ones that Trump says are genetically inferior, the ones who happen to be at the top of the class in all the universities are supposedly genetically inferior.
Guess again, Donald. Not right. Totally wrong. But, you know, what do we expect? You look at J.D. Vance, all right? If Trump is taken out, you got Vance in there. And Vance is going to be the Palantir president. Simple truth. He will be representative of Peter Thiel and Palantir, first and foremost. Thiel created J.D. Vance, essentially. I mean, I think J.D. Vance is quite dominated by his wife. I'm not saying that's good or bad. I'm just saying it appears to be the case. It's my best guess. So we won't get, I think we'll get more mental, observable mental competence from Vance, certainly by far, than Trump. He won't be trailing off in mid-sentence and babbling about things and running his mouth. At least we hope not. So we will see what happens. I don't see Trump finishing his 4 years. I just don't see it. Anyhow,
I don't, I don't see Vance choosing another country to bomb.
No, I don't either. I agree. I concur. I don't believe he's under the thumb of Netanyahu and the international Zionism like Trump is, for whatever reason. We'll find out, perhaps. The sky's the limit. There's a lot of potential on the table. Happy Easter to you. Enjoy the day, Father Kramer. I know you'll be deep in prayer and thought, and we share that with you. Thank you for being here.
And happy Easter to you and all your listeners.
Okay. Good night. Father Paul Kramer from Ireland. Okay, dear friends, that's another week. Have a good weekend, and do think about Easter a little bit. Even if you're not a Christian, just give it some thought about the big message there, about the golden rule. That's enough for me right there. I've always tried to follow that. Okay, wherever you are around the world, thank you for being here. I hope things are going well for you. I really do. And we will be back Monday. In the meantime, the network will continue presenting radio programs to you, for you, all during the weekend. And Rents.com will be there with the best compendium of news that I can aggregate for you. Take care. We'll talk soon.